Daily news and analysis. We keep you informed and inspired.
This is World Today.
China's high-level government officials are busy traveling around Europe, showing the country's support for the development path chosen by the European people and to Europe in achieving strategic autonomy. What would a strategically independent Europe entail for its relations with China and the future of the region? Welcome to World Today, the panel discussion with Mika Anna. We're coming to you from our studio in Beijing with a different perspective. Chinese Vice President Han Zheng has been invited to visit Portugal and the Netherlands after attending the coronation ceremony of King Charles III in London. And at the invitation of the governments of Germany, France and Norway, State Councillor and Foreign Minister Qin Gang has been busy meeting his counterparts in those countries. All this come after the recent China visits made by French President, the European Commission Chief, and the German Foreign Minister. Now, what are the major takeaways from Chinese officials' visit to Europe? What far-reaching impact will these tours have on China-Europe relations? To delve into this, we are joined by Helga Zappeler-Rusch from Germany, founder of the Schiller Institute, a political and economic think tank. Thanks for joining us, Helga.
Yes, good day.
And Chen Weihua from Belgium, chief of China Daily EU Bureau. Great to have you on our show, Weihua.
Hi, Anna. Good to be with you.
And Mike Basting from the UK, China Observer and a senior lecturer at the University of Southampton. Nice talking to you, Mike.
You too. Thanks for the invitation. Yeah, looking forward to the discussion.
Yes. Let me start with you, Weihua. How do you see the visits of Chinese Vice President Han Zheng to Portugal and the Netherlands, and Foreign Minister Qin Gang to Germany, France, and Norway? And how do these two trips reflect a full resumption of exchanges and high-level interactions between China and the EU since the end of last year?
Yeah, I think it's both are very significant visits. We all know China just reopened after the pandemic earlier this year, and actually, these two leaders got their new portfolio just 2 months ago at the National People's Congress, And so, and we all know this after like 3 years of the COVID-19 pandemic, which really limited or restricted the people's face-to-face contact. I mean, most remained as a sort of a video conference. And also during this past 3 years, you have too many things happened internationally. The challenges are more than ever, of course, the Russian-Ukraine conflict, the pandemic itself has been worse enough, of course, and the China-US rivalry. And so it's getting worse also. And even among the Europeans, the European Union, I think there was also in the rising populism, you know, other divisions. So so this is very important. I think Europe talks about strategic economy, and China want to have a stable, mutually beneficial relationship with EU. So I think this signals that there will be more bilateral exchange, face-to-face, I mean, to come. So this is just the beginning. I think there will be many more such exchange in the days, weeks, months ahead.
Mike, what's your take? How do you see the resumption of exchanges and high-level interactions between China and the EU and also Europe countries like Norway?
Well, I agree with the point. Well, I think it's very, very significant, very strategic, and very positive on the China side. I think it's significant they've chosen very high-level officials to visit not just the economic sort of power base, the hub, obviously Germany, that Franco-German alliance, and Germany in particular, but also, as you mentioned, Norway, which technically is not really part of the EU trading bloc, and also to go to the Netherlands, and in particular Portugal. So I think it's very, very significant, very timely, and I think it will bode well for future relations between the EU and China, which I think are far more positive. If you read through the lines, I think there's a lot of positives there and a lot of trading opportunities that these visits, these trips will help have come to fruition. So I think it's a very, very good thing. And it's really an approach across EU as well, which I think is very, very important. And not just looking at that the sort of Germanies and the France and the French. Yeah.
Helga, some people even describe this resumption of exchanges between China and the EU as a comprehensive restart. What's your perspective?
Well, I think it is extremely important because, you know, many people, including the head of the IMF, Mrs. Georgieva, and the former president of Malaysia, Mahathir, have warned that the world is presently in risk of dividing into two blocks. And Dr. Mahathir in particular had said that this is the risk, involves the risk of leading to a world war. So I think the EU-China relation can be an extremely important bridge preventing such a division into two blocks. So I think that this is extremely important. However, you know, I think it is, you know, it does require really a lot of work because, as you can see by the different responses to these high-level Chinese officials in the different countries, there is not a unified EU, but you have many countries who have quite different views on the matter. So I think these relations should be really, you know, polished and secured.
Helga, to be more specific, what do you make of the two routes and the European countries chosen by the two officials?
Well, I think there are some countries who are doing what is in their best interest. Like, for example, I think the visit to Portugal went extremely well. And that has a lot to do with the fact that Portugal is the country which has the longest relations with China, which go back, you know, even to the 16th century when Jorge Alvarez arrived in Tamao Island at the coast of Guangdong province in 1513. Also, Portugal is important because of the Portuguese-speaking nations like Angola, Brazil, Macau. So I think for the Maritime Silk Road, Portugal has a lot of vested interest to cooperate with China. Other countries, you know, are more under the control and influence of the United States and Great Britain right now, and therefore they tend to go more in the direction of decoupling. So it's a very diversified picture right now.
Chen, from Chinese perspective, based on your observation, why selected these two routes?
Well, I would like to think, I mean, these countries they visited obviously are very important. But I would say there were others too. But it was obviously, I mean, just as Mike mentioned, some are EU countries, some are not. I mean, like Norway. Norway is, you know, population-wise small, but it's internationally, it always played a very important role. I mean, especially, I mean, during the current crisis, and it has become increasingly important, you know, in energy supply to EU even. And internationally, I mean, the United Nations humanitarian, you know, assistance, Norway has been have played outside the role, I would say, as a relatively small population, you know, and the Netherlands, for obvious reason, I mean, the recent issue of a semiconductor, I would say, I mean, a lot of U.S. pressure on the Netherlands, which I think it's really a violation of the Netherlands' sovereignty, I would say. But the Dutch find it sometimes hard to resist your pressure. And the Dutch business obviously want to maintain good, I mean, lucrative business ties with China. So I think there was a lot of things to address. I mean, Germany, France, for obvious reason, and Portugal has a good relation, very stable relations with China in the past decades. I mean, we all know the 1999 handover of Macau to China's, you know, and so, and the Portuguese leaders actually talk positively about this one country, two system, you know. So it is definitely, I think, one of the role model of bilateral relation. I mean, Chinese companies have invested a lot in Portugal, and it has been playing a positive role, I would say.
Mike, what are your thoughts on the two routes and the European nations selected by the two officials?
Well, again, I think it's very, very comprehensive. I think what the Chinese are trying to do is maintain relations across the EU and look at it not just as a German, Franco-German, being a Franco-German power base. Obviously, those are the two most dominant economies, but looking further afield, looking at longer term, at specific opportunities. So I think the two routes make a lot of sense. Obviously, again, Norway is a different country with a different culture, different history, and there are probably issues to discuss and relationships to build there that require perhaps a different approach to perhaps Germany and France. As has been said, the relationship with Portugal is very, very rich, very, very healthy, has been going on for hundreds of years. I think your panelists said, yes, it does date back to the 16th century, and there's lots and lots to learn from that relationship and how the two countries have shared their cultures, traded, and trade is going well beyond the initial industrial sectors. So I think the two routes make a lot of sense rather than just ploughing through perhaps Germany and with a little bit of France, even though Macron did pay a visit to Beijing and President Xi Jinping recently as well. I think it makes sense to come back to the EU in the way that they have done, which I think will be beneficial, I think, for everybody.
Helga, both our guests mentioned about Norway, which is the last stop of Qinggang's trip. What do you make of this destination? How do you view China-Norway relations in the past 3 years?
Well, I think we have seen in Norway what has been generally the response from the industrial leaders. The industrial leaders in actually all countries have expressed interest to maintain good relations with China, and you know, it is in their fundamental interest. That was the response of the Norwegian industry in particular. So I think the political leadership in some countries would do much better to listen to their industrial leaders, who obviously have in many cases much more understanding about what is the basis for the common good, for the well-being of the people, that if you need, you know, if you want to have a good economy, you have to have trade relations. And since China is right now, without any question, the locomotive of the world economy, it is in the fundamental interest to keep expanding these relations and not go the other way, as some of the politicians are proposing. So I think Norway was an important part in that, where that sentiment was expressed, as it is expressed, for example, in France, in Italy, and in Germany.
Helga, earlier you mentioned that Portugal is the European nation with the longest peaceful relations with China and dating back to the 16th century. So given their ties over the centuries, how do you assess Portugal's role in China's relations with Europe today?
Well, I think it can be a role model because, you know, you need an open-minded understanding of the culture of the other side, and that is definitely the case. So I think in the context of President Xi Jinping's Global Civilization Initiative, which promotes the idea of a dialogue among cultures, I think that could be a very important example, because I'm afraid that given the extreme lack of knowledge of many people in Europe about China's history, China's culture, I think there should be made a huge effort to present the 5,000-year of historical, you know, culture of China. And on the other side, you know, to bring in the high points of European culture from Portugal, from Spain, from Italy, Germany, France, and other countries, to make them known to the Chinese. Because I think if both sides understand the best traditions of their culture, then a lot of mistrust and a lot of prejudices immediately disappear. So maybe Portugal and China want to sponsor some big event for all of Europe, you know, featuring Xi Jinping's Global Civilization Initiative, you know, to show actually how culture can be the basis for trust and friendship.
Mm-hmm. Chen, Helga just mentioned the Global Civilization Initiative, and Chinese ambassador to Portugal earlier suggested to cooperate within the scope of this initiative. How does this suggestion of strengthening collaboration within the initiative align with Portugal's aspiration for promoting common values of peace, development, democracy and freedom, etc.?
I agree with what Helga just said. I mean, I think China-Portugal relations are really a good example, a role model for other China-EU member states. I mean, I was there actually in December 2018 when President Xi visited Portugal. I mean, actually, mm-hmm. the two countries signed the Belt Road Initiative, you know, memorandum. So that obviously showed that Portugal was very positive about cooperation with China. I think, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not expert on Portugal, but I sense that there is a reason because of the Portuguese, you know, the old link with Macau. I mean, probably the Portuguese is more sensible in understanding China. I mean, there was a great effort. I mean, it was more nuanced. I think, obviously, I mean, in the past decades, China-Portugal relations shows that, as you said, I mean, it was a more... we respect each other. I mean, the differences. We show respect for each other's civilization. You know, just we can exist even we have differences in the political system, even economic system, you know, culture, others. But that's, I think, laid the foundation for the relationship, a good relationship, and that is, I think. And as I said earlier, that China has come to the help of Portugal, I think, after the financial crisis, actually. So I think at a time when Portugal needed badly, I mean, foreign investment injection, I would say, to salvage its economy, I mean, so the debt crisis like 10, 12 years ago. And so I think the relationship, I mean, has proved to be good because China is, as everybody knows, is not interested in meddling in others' internal affairs. Mm-hmm. We're not. We're just focused, laser focused on mutually beneficial cooperation. That is a win-win. Obviously, if you look at Portugal's location at the southern tip of the European continent, it's a great advantage for connectivity, global connectivity. And that is not just good for China and Portugal, but for Europe and for the entire world, I would say. And that is fundamentally, I mean, because people talk about China, U.S. Fighting for this port there. But I would say, you know, economic development is peaceful, as you mentioned, the peace, development, equity, justice, democracy, and freedom. And that is not waging war. It's not invading as a sovereignty, right? I mean, China has never done that. I mean, so as the last few decades have proved.
Mm-hmm. Mike, do you share the same stance? How do you see the impact of China-Portugal relations on China-EU relations?
I think it should be very, very positive. I echo what the sentiment. I think the key thing here is the relationship between China and Portugal is not just economic, it's cultural, it's historical. And the Portuguese have shown tremendous interest and respect for and have sort of raised the profile of Chinese culture and Chinese heritage. So, for example, silk and porcelain, introducing those to Europe, going back quite a few years now, a few hundred years. And from that emerged this whole area known as Chinoiserie, which really is very much a Portuguese instigated thing. So I think that, you know, we can learn a lot from this relationship between two countries, which goes far beyond trade, as it should, and therefore is far deeper, far richer, and almost certainly going to be more mutually beneficial and longer lasting. So it's not just about, you know, can you help me, you know, let's do deals, financial deals, which is very, very important. Obviously, this is a real role model for future bilateral relationships, maybe multilateral relationships. But I have to say, from all the work that I've done over the years, I've been calling for this for the UK side and the EU side far more. They've seen China far too often as simply a trading opportunity, an economic gain opportunity, and they need to do what follow the Portuguese model and show genuine interest in Chinese history, Chinese heritage, Chinese culture, which is so rich. So very, very significant and should be held up as a role model for future economic and cultural relations, Portugal and China.
Indeed, this visit explains the significance of China-Portugal relations. Let's move on to the next topic. Helga, the French President Emmanuel Macron, the European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen, and the German Foreign Minister Baerbock have just concluded their visit to China. What do you make of the timing of this recent two visits to France and Germany? What does both sides aim to achieve?
Well, I think the question of European-Chinese relationship right now is extremely important for the reason I mentioned earlier, because, you know, if Europe can be pulled into the camp of the so-called democracies versus the so-called autocracies, it would really be a catastrophe for all of humanity. And fortunately, at this point, President Macron has a very different attitude. He says that Europe must have its strategic independence, and a big part of that is that France wants to have a good relationship with China. So this was also, basically when Foreign Minister Xin Gang went to Paris right now in the aftermath of the Macron visit to China. He met with French Foreign Minister Catherine Colonna, and basically she emphasized the important role of China for ensuring peace and stability around the world. So I think, you know, that is definitely one thing. Unfortunately, the visit of Mrs. Baerbock to China was of a different nature. She was more provocative, and I think she is not a very good diplomat. I actually think, you know, to be totally honest, that she is not in the right space for this position, because her understanding of diplomacy is not diplomatic. You know, she always makes statements which reflect a very poor understanding of diplomacy and the real intentions of China. So naturally, when now Xin Gang went to Berlin and they met again, you know, they had not a very easy time, and profound disagreements came out. So, you know, I mean, for example, this whole what Baerbock is saying is essentially the same thing what von der Leyen is saying, and this has been criticized a lot by German industry leaders who demand a much more reliable and long-term relationship to China. So it's a complicated situation, but I think, you know, even in the German government, you don't have a unified position, because Chancellor Scholz has made very clear that he does want to have more of a stable relationship. Even so, his position has been shaky in the recent period, as was expressed in his speech in the European Parliament, where he said that, you know, the relationship is characterized by partnership, competition, and rivalry. You know, I think this is really a terminology which has been basically coined by the United States and by Great Britain. And I think it would be really important for Europe, for European nations, to define their own interest. I think the question of sovereignty at this point should be upfront, and every country should really think, you know, what is best for them, for their citizens, for the future of, you know, coming generation, and think about long term, how do we want the world to look like?
Thanks, Helga. Let's have a short break. We'll be back in a minute.
I am Dan Wang, Chief Economist of Hang Seng Bank China. The World Today is a real fun program. You will hear interesting people discussing global trend, economic event, what's happening in and outside of China. So, friends around the world, hope you can join us.
Hello everyone, this is Zun Ahmed Khan, currently based in Tsinghua University. World Today is an excellent initiative to discuss current affairs by including experts from across the globe. I've always enjoyed our thought-provoking discussions and wish the team even more success and impact in the future.
Welcome back to Road Today, the panel discussion on Chinese high-level officials' visit to Europe. We're joined by Helga Zappala-Rouge, founder of the Schiller Institute, a Germany-based political and economic think tank, Chen Weihua, chief of China Delhi EU Bureau, Mike Basting, China Observer and a senior lecturer at the University of Southampton. Let's continue our discussion. Helga, earlier, sorry for the interruption as we ran out of time for the first half. Could you please continue your opinion on the European strategic autonomy?
Yeah, I said that I think that the fundamental question Europe has to decide, and I don't think Europe as European Union, but more the European nations, you know, what should be the future of, you know, our world? Because either we manage to find a level of the higher one, of the one humanity, or what Xi Jinping always calls the shared future of humanity, or the common future we have, we are sitting in one boat. Mm-hmm. And either we learn to resolve our conflicts through diplomacy and eventually even by developing friendship among nations and have a peaceful future, or we are risking a big confrontation. And right now, that question is not decided yet. And I think every well-meaning person in the world is called upon to contribute to this discussion. I think we need to have a new global security and development architecture, which takes into interest the interest of every single country on the planet. And I think the time of solving problems by war in the times of thermonuclear weapons should be completely out, because if it ever would come to that, nobody would survive. I think Xi Jinping has offered many very valuable proposals, the Global Security Initiative, the Global Development Initiative, now the Global Civilizational Initiative, and all of these provide potentially a framework to settle conflicts in an amicable way. And I think that needs to be deepened because, you know, it is one humanity we have.
Mm-hmm. Chen, Helga mentioned the inconsistency of EU's China policy. We know French President Macron's attitude has changed significantly since his visit to China. He proposed that Europe can no longer continue to be a follower of the United States to seek strategic autonomy and to become a superpower tied with China and the United States. But German Chancellor Scholz clearly expressed his opposition to this new concept in his speech at the European Parliament recently. So what do you make of the inconsistency within the bloc, especially between the two biggest powers?
Well, I think EU is, I mean, divided among the 27 member states. Actually, as we speak now, I mean, the EU foreign ministers, member states are meeting in Stockholm right now to discuss a host of issues. One of the key issues is the EU's policy on China. So it's undecided, and there are differences among the member states. But I would just follow what you say. I think Macron and von der Leyen's visit to China just last month were very significant in the sense, I mean, Macron famous said EU should not be a vassal of the United States, especially, I mean, this possible tension across the Taiwan Strait. I think, you know, of course, there was a backlash, but privately, actually, the European Council President Jean Michel, a former Belgian prime minister, told the media that actually that was the thinking of many member states, mm-hmm. but they just won't say it publicly. And so it's not just Macron thinking alone. Actually, some members are worried about EU being dragged into this confrontation between China and the United States. And even for von der Leyen, and she was quite, I thought, critical of China previously, but I think her rhetoric now, I mean, it's sort of not, she basically said that decoupling is neither feasible nor desirable for European Union. And it was an improvement from her previous rhetoric. I think European leaders wake up, I mean, and see that this, I mean, they have been traumatized by the Russian-Ukraine conflict. I mean, the energy crisis, for instance, the lack of competitiveness in their economic industrial sector now due to the crisis. And they now see that if they are following the Washington rhetoric of decoupling from China, and they are committing economic suicide. So I think this is more back to more being more rational. I mean, this because and decoupling is bad for China, but it's so bad for Europe too. So it's just stupid for politicians to go there. I mean, as Helga mentioned, the business leaders are much, much more smarter. I mean, if you listen to the chief executive of Mercedes-Benz, Volkswagen, and they all make a lot of sense. They're very bullish about China. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, we understand the EU leaders' concern after the Ukraine crisis, after the end, you know, the pandemic. They're sort of about economic risk. I mean, because the EU is impacted most. But you know, they should not overdo it. They should not overstretch. I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mike, as Chen mentioned, amid geopolitical tensions and growing challenges posed by Ukraine crisis, European policymakers, including French President Emmanuel Macron, are seeking ways to strengthen the continent's strategic autonomy, which is reflected in the debate over its relations with China. So how do you see the division among EU members?
Well, I think that when you have a group, a club of 27 members, there's always going to be division, not going to be one. People often look at the EU as, you know, tremendous success in terms of trade integration, economic integration, liberalization, you know, monetary union. Now I think it's 18 members of the single currency. But there is still division for the historical reasons, cultural reasons. So I think there always will be division. I think the key player in all this is Macron. And I think what hasn't been discussed so far is very, very important, that he has a certain personality and a certain way of looking at this situation and the political issues that is perhaps different to other leaders and different even to members of his party's new party anyway. And perhaps he's not really leading the French people. He has his own agenda. So I think we have to appreciate and try to understand that more. And he certainly is very, very keen to distance or reduce the reliance perhaps on America and publicize the fact that the Americans are not the sort of dominant economic superpower, which they were, which is true. And he's also very, very keen to work closer with China. And he hasn't used the language, I think, that's very, very negative, quite provocative language that some of the German leaders have used where China is concerned. I mean, they've used the word risk and de-risking. I mean, they are stepping back from that, as your panelists said, and talking about there's no way we can decouple. We must work together and everything's possible. So I think all eyes really are on Macron and whether or not he stays at helm in France and his particular way of looking at things. I think that will prevail. And I think we have to understand that leaders of these countries do have quite different views when it comes to all sorts of political issues. And we're going to come on to relations between the UK and China. And those have changed a lot in only a few years, and largely because of the personnel changes at the top of the UK government. I think that's the main reason.
Mm-hmm. Mike, based on your observation and study, how do the differing views on China within the EU complicated factors and influence the balance between dialogue or economic political relations with China?
Well, I think they do complicate things. I think that they need to, there needs to be more discussion. And as we said, with the Portugal, the Chinese relationship going back hundreds of years, and the cultural really sort of understanding and appreciation, that's something that I think should spread across the EU and across the EU countries more. And I think that will perhaps lead to a less complicated and a clearer way forward. But I think there always will be differences of opinion. I think the EU countries generally do regard China, as they should, as a very, very positive influence on the world economy, and very, very much Asia is the future this century and beyond. So I think that whilst there will be division and that there will be differences, I think ultimately they will come to the table looking for a very, very positive trade relationship, and perhaps they can learn again from the Portuguese and how they really are in a much, much stronger position because of their real interest and appreciation of Chinese cultural vision. And I think that's coming from the Chinese side as well, but sadly not that much from the European side.
Mm-hmm. Chen, speaking of Chinese perspective on European strategic autonomy, Qinggang once again mentioned that China hopes that the EU will adhere to its strategic independence. What does a EU with strategic autonomy mean to China?
Well, obviously, that's a big concern for China. I mean, EU has been talking about the strategic autonomy. I mean, of course, we come back to Macron. I mean, since he took office in 2017, and that has been their slogan. I mean, and, you know, for me, I mean, here based in Brussels. But, you know, but that, of course, becomes some kind of a problem because the Russian-Ukraine conflict obviously make the EU, I would say, more dependent on the United States, I mean, because of NATO for some reason. So I think there's, you know, if you anyone talk about a strategic autonomy, sometimes it become a toxic topic because you know, because of the conflict, I think the U.S. has much more leverage and influence over the European Union. That's a big concern for China because China always see EU as a partner. And what the ambassador Fu Chong here, a Chinese ambassador to EU, would say, China see EU as an important power center in the world on a global stage, and China count on EU, you know, for a very important to be an important player in a future multilateral world, right? So that means that China doesn't want EU to follow the US, as Helga mentioned, to divide the world into two blocks. I mean, I always say for Europeans, it's hell to go back to another Cold War. I mean, they had good memory, the older generation especially. I mean, country were treating each other as enemy. I mean, Germany was dividing the two. So I think that is why, I mean, China want to spare no efforts to communicate with EU European leaders, try to build a more just multilateral world, which means in such a multilateral world, European Union will exercise what is called strategic autonomy, not following blindly, as Macron said, not to be a U.S. vassal state.
Chen, in the context of ongoing debate, so do you have any suggestions or how can the EU develop a more objective perception of China and filter out external influences, particularly from the United States?
I would say that mutual trust is critical. I mean, as actually I, you know, I again bring back the Ambassador Fu Chong, who, you know, when I asked him just 2-3 days ago, I mean, he mentioned that the erosion of mutual trust between China and EU in the last few years due to many complex reasons. But I think he mentioned that kind of mutual trust was at a quite high level before that. I would agree with that because, you know, the March 2019 EU definition of China-EU relation as a cooperation partner, economic competitor, and a systemic rival, obviously is something China objects because China sees each other as a partner, as a comprehensive strict partner. We had a formal agreement on that. So China, EU share so many fundamental interests. I mean, It's not economic trade cooperation, globalization, global governance, and fighting climate change, and nuclear nuclear proliferation, and helping the developing nation. I mean, you know, so there is so many we should work together. I mean, we have differences, but that was the something we have, you know, just remember we. Despite our differences in the last, our relationship grow by leaps and bounds, actually exactly on the basis we respect our differences. I mean, we had this dialogues going on various issues from trade, economic to human rights. So we can discuss, still make, you know, today, I mean, we are an EU, China, each other's major trading partner, number two to each other, basically. So I think if you have more trust, there is a very little you want to de-risk, right? If you don't trust each other, you think everything is a risk. I remember people talk about face mask as very necessary to be self-sufficient in Europe. I said, come on, well, next time you're talking about the shirts, garments, maybe socks and shoes. So I don't think, you know, because the past decades have proved China is not going to weaponize those things. I mean, it's a paranoia. I mean, but I mean, obviously EU going through this pandemic and the conflict, Russia, Ukraine, and there is some, you know, fear. So we have to have more communication in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Helga, what would a strategically independent Europe entail for its relations with China and the future of the region? Is strategic autonomy in the region a unanimous goal for the bloc?
No, I don't think it is that right now, because, you know, you have right now the difference between France and Germany. There are many people inside France who think that Germany is completely under the control of the US right now. And, you know, there is a certain truth to that, you know, and I think it has to be reversed, because, you know, it would be absolutely catastrophic if Germany would drift in this direction. Now, I think that we are in such a crisis. I mean, look, the financial system is very shaky. Bloomberg just recently reported that of 4,800 US banks, 2,300 have more liabilities than assets. Now, that is a complete risk. You know, so what will be done about that? There is a new currency in the process of being created by the countries of the global south who are de-dollarizing because they do not any longer want to have to pay for U.S. Budget deficits de facto. I mean, there are so many, I don't even want to start about Ukraine and Taiwan. I think the complexity of the problems of the world right now do require that people make a jump and think about a new paradigm altogether. Because I think that if it would come to a decoupling, you know, and even Chancellor Scholz in his speech in Strasbourg said that China in the recent period would have put more emphasis on competition and rivalry and not so much anymore on partnership, which I do not see like that at all. So you have a very complex situation, which is terribly dangerous. And I think what is required is to really define a completely new paradigm in thinking, you know, to start with the common interest of the one humanity, put the national interest in the context of that, and then find a way of overcoming these supposedly unbridgeable difficulties, because the global south right now, that's 85% of the human population. They want to end colonialism. They do not want anymore to be deprived of economic development. And because of the Belt and Road Initiative, you know, which is now 10 years in process, many countries see for the first time the perspective of overcoming underdevelopment and poverty. And Europe should join with China in that endeavor. I mean, to develop Africa, Latin America, and many Asian countries, and even the poor in Europe, and by that token, even the United States, it would require that all countries cooperate. And if the present establishments are not capable of seeing that, well, there come elections, you know. I mean, the United States will have a very important election in next year. Mm-hmm. Maybe the situation will completely change. But I think we need politicians and leaders of industry to come forward and take an opinion and a word in what the shape of the future world should be, and not let the tendencies which are supposedly dominant right now run their course, because the decoupling would lead, in my view, to a danger of a world war. I fully agree with Dr. Mahathir from Malaysia, mm-hmm. who pointed to that danger very clearly. So I think, you know, even the talk about de-risking, I find gobbledygook, because the people who say, let's not decouple, let's de-risk, de facto, it is a decoupling. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of duplicity in the discussion. And, you know, I can only say, you know, the offers which were made by China for Europe, European nations individually, but even the EU collectively, to cooperate in great projects, like, for example, take the Middle East. Because of the diplomatic role of China, you have now a rapprochement between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and that has potentially changed the entire region of Southwest Asia, which needs urgent investments. Afghanistan is destroyed. Iraq, Syria, Yemen, all of these countries suffer from tremendous consequences of the interventionist wars, and they need to be reconstructed. The people are living there in terrible conditions, like Syria, for example. 90% of people are living below the poverty line, and they need so much investment that even the joint efforts of the United States, China, Europe, and other countries together would not be enough to really make things work very quickly. So the need to cooperate is more urgent than ever. And I think that is the moral demand on everybody who has any role in politics or industry or social organizations for that matter.
Mm-hmm. The urgency to cooperate between China and the Europe. Mike, what's your perspective on how can EU develop a more objective perception of China and filter out external influences, especially from the United States?
Well, I think, again, in danger of repeating myself, but I think what the EU need to do is look at Chinese history, China's long, rich history and culture, and with that, I think, come to a far more understanding view of China, China's emergence, China's internationalization on the world stage, and not fear China, not use that language or have that perception that there's a risk here. So when a Chinese state-owned company, as Costco are about to do, invest in a Hamburg port terminal, it really should be nothing but applause and a really, really good move for all sides. So I think the EU need to understand the fact that China is an opportunity, a welcome opportunity, that really is instigating or continuing this multilateral trade philosophy. It's not, the words threat and risk are totally misplaced. So I think they've somehow got to really expunge that from their thinking, their rhetoric, and what better way than to look at China's long, rich history to see that that really is the Chinese way. I also think they can learn from the internationalization of various Chinese brands now, particularly in my area in fashion, where we see the representation of traditional Chinese elements, traditional Chinese culture, so a lot of pride, as there should be. And that gives you a window into understanding the Chinese mentality, particularly those younger generations. So I think it's really for the EU side to come off this sort of the fence when it comes to the sort of battle and jostling for position, and really welcome China as a partner, a friend, and a really a supportive symbiotic relationship where one helps each other. You know, virtuous circle is really what we're looking at. I think that's most important.
Mm-hmm. Mike, when Europe's position on China has changed and the influence of the United States cannot be ignored, then how do you think China has adjusted its European policy?
Well, I think they have. I mean, the EU is China's largest trading partner. So obviously, it's understandable that there's perhaps a more focus on the EU and working with these countries, hence the diplomatic visits recently across European nations. I think China is still very, very much open to a similar relationship with the US, very, very close economic and trading relationship that can benefit both. So I see no reason why it's not one or the other, and perhaps adjusting to one more than the other. Again, I don't see why they can't come together and look at relationships across the three. And I think, again, having sort of pointed the finger a little bit at the EU side, I think the issue is, again, on the American side, where they have to realize that they're part of a new world order, a new economic order, where they have to take their place at the top table, but they don't automatically chair the top table, and not at all. And it really is a rotating, if you like, leadership, where perhaps the three blocks work together more across each other. So I think the focus more on the EU makes sense. I think the Americans will come to the table. I think they will change and soften and understand that they've got to be part of this new economic order and not perhaps dominate and sit back and just expect people to play to their tune. That's not going to work. So I think change is on the way.
Mm-hmm. Chen, what's your take as Europe's attitude and the international landscape is changing? How do you think China should adjust its policies towards the European region?
Well, I think it is ongoing issue. I would say there was the verdict is not a return. I would say, I mean, so that's why I think China is working very diligently, working hard, trying to persuade the Europeans not to join the U.S. So-called new Cold War, to divide the war. I mean, in decoupling or whatever, the U.S. Warmongering or a lot of things. I think it is a very complex issue, as we say. I mean, obviously very much hopeful. I mean, China could play, say, for example, a very instrumental role in this mediating the Russian-Ukraine conflict. I mean, China has put out proposals, and I hope it works to, finally and to some extent, and that will help. And obviously, the China-EU positive trade relation, people-to-people exchange, and more Chinese tourists coming back, and they are all going to help, I mean, to warming up this relationship. Very important.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Chen, and thanks to all of our panelists. That's all the time for this edition of Word Today with Mika Anna. Thank you again for joining us, and have a nice weekend.
Hello, everyone. This is Zoon Ahmed Khan, currently based in Tsinghua University. World Today is an excellent initiative to discuss current affairs by including experts from across the globe. I've always enjoyed our thought-provoking discussions and wish the team even more success and impact in the future.